welcome back from vacation. Your skin tone reflects it.
A lot of golf. We had the club championship last week, and our team didn't do too well. I played well, but you know, yeah, 3 days out of the office playing golf.
Hey, did you see the video I tagged you in of me playing golf?
No, is that on Twitter?
Zach, yes, I tagged you because I wanted your feedback on my first golf swing. So you will look at it. I want some feedback. I'm sure you're going to be thoroughly impressed.
Yeah, well, I will give you the evaluation process. Okay. And then I'll even bring a diagram. We could do it on the show. I'm sure your listeners would love to see a 15 to 20 minute swing breakdown
of
your golf swing.
I feel like once you see it, you're no longer going to want me as a client. You're going to be like, someone else can manage your money. I'm embarrassed. I don't want anything to do with it.
No. Golf is one of those universal things where people always feel stupid when they start because they forget that we all started from the same spot.
Yeah.
But to get good at golf, you have to look like a fool for a while.
True.
Like it's the way it works.
Oh, all right. We're going to get to more on, actually, really quick. Sorry, I just haven't seen you. I have things to catch up on.
Yeah.
Loved seeing you in pictures at the turn-in for the income tax repeal. They brought in all the initiative, you know, to repeal the income tax and the signatures to the Secretary of State's office. And I'm looking at the pictures from the event because I couldn't make it. And there I see Zach Abraham helping them haul in the boxes of voter signatures. Yeah. Is that the first time you've ever done anything like that?
Yeah, that's the first time I've been in an event like that. And it's so neat. You meet these people. You know, I'm sure you have those. We're just doing what we do, you know, doing our job every day.
Yeah.
And you forget that you've got friends and supporters out there that you don't know,
right?
You've never met. And it's just so encouraging to get around like-minded people. And I got up there and said a few words after Brian, and just kind of given the rallying cry that we're just going to keep fighting this thing to the bitter end. But it was a fun event. I was glad I went.
I think I'm rubbing off on you. off on you.
You are. Big time. Well, and that's one of the things, you know, it's funny you bring that up because one of the things that I've had a conversation with a lot of the guys that have gotten involved in the Let's Go Washington deal is, I've always been politically aware and politically involved, but not so much on a local basis because, you know, all of the stuff that really impacted my business was federal, right? And we've all kind of had these discussions behind the scenes of, hey, we screwed up. We weren't as involved. We didn't see... We didn't see the threat that was what was going on in this state. And, my hope is, and my belief is from being boots on the ground and seeing it, is that I honestly think that that's going to end up being the biggest mistake that the other side has made.
Yeah.
Is that they finally rung a bell that they can't unring and that permanently woke up a big sector of us that previously weren't, you know, paying attention.
Well, and I hope also those are some people who, you know, previously have voted blue no matter who. And for instance, this week, I mean, we already saw that former Governor Christine Gregoire had come out and basically said, look, they don't know how to budget. They don't know how to, you know, create a budget, spend wisely on any of these things. Now, former Governor Gary Locke is saying the same thing. Here's the clip.
There's no budget discipline. They're taking one-time money and creating permanent programs without any thought as to how are they going to sustain that program when that one-time money goes away? Or they're borrowing money from various accounts and not knowing how they're going to pay that back and then how they're going to sustain that program that they borrowed the money for if and when they return that money back to the original fund. So I think spending is out of control in Olympia. They need much more discipline. They need to set priorities. And when they say that they're going to create a program and they ask the voters to approve of that particular program, they need to make sure that they don't take that money a few years later and spend it on something else, because then the voters lose faith, whether it's with their city government, county government, or state government. Well, already they've committed that source of money to various programs, but they're already facing a budget deficit 2 years from now. So what's going on? They say that this was necessary to balance the budget, but even with that money, they're facing a deficit. And will they even be able to use that money for the programs that they've promised the voters?
Yeah, I mean, that's common sense. Now, I wish he'd be a little more aggressive. Same with Christine Gregoire. I wish they'd name names. You know, Greg Warr was standing alongside Governor Ferguson when he announced his bid for governor, and he's done all this. He's pushing ahead on this. But to have two very well-respected former Democratic governors of Washington now saying this is out of control, I mean, that has to wake some people up on the left, please, doesn't it? Doesn't it?
Yeah, I would think so. But I'd push back with Gary a little bit on that. And I would say, no, I think they do have a plan. And I think their plan is the golden goose plan, meaning cut its head off, rip it open and take out. Right. Like just meaning, you know, that's effectively what their tax plan is. Mm. Right. It's just go decapitate the golden goose and take the golden eggs out. And is it incredibly short-sighted? Absolutely. Is it suicide that you're going to set a tax rate for people over $1 million a year that would give them a higher effective tax rate in the state of Washington than would in San Diego? That's idiocy.
Yeah.
Right? Anybody could see that on a surface of it. But, you know, the other thing that I wish more people understood is that, you know, when you get involved in these things and you get behind the scenes with these people, yeah, sure, nobody wants to pay extra tax.
Yeah.
But if you look at the money that some of us are putting into it and the time that we're spending and the energy we're putting, this is a principled battle to us. This is not about money. It really isn't, right? It really, and I wish people understood that. You know, I hear them say all these things about a friend of ours, Brian Haywood, where you go, you are so mischaracterizing this guy, it's not even fair.
Yeah.
It's insane.
They don't know him, you know? And yes.
No.
Does he care about not having, he doesn't want to pay the income tax, of course. No one wants to freaking pay the income tax. Oh, it's about the money. And yes, is that part of it? 100%. Nobody wants to give more money to the government, except one example, which I'll play for you momentarily. But that's such a stupid argument because nobody wants to do that. That's no sane person wants to do that.
You know, and I would just break it down, like people, the evil rich guys, you know, people that don't want to believe me won't believe me anyway. But I will just tell you that the biggest concern for us, guys like me, guys like Brian, behind the scenes is you don't understand what you're doing if this passes.
Yeah.
If this passes and allowed to stay in play, there is effectively no rule of law in the state of Washington anymore because they're going to break precedent. They're going to violate a very clear line and principle that was put forth in our Constitution a long time ago that's already been defended multiple times in state where you've got 11 different votes from the populace that have backed it up. And so, like you and I have said from the beginning, you don't like that part of the Constitution, then amend it. You didn't do that. You're going about it illegally in every single way. So my biggest thing to people has been, guys, forget about, nobody wants to pay the tax and it's going to be devastating to business. But the scarier thing is, if you understand the way our legal system works and you understand the role that precedent plays, if this is allowed to go down, there is no rules.
Yeah.
Like there aren't any.
Yeah.
And the Constitution doesn't matter. You don't have to amend it if you don't like it. You know, they talk about making elections more fair. You know, when you look at the role that the SEIU plays in elections and how much more money they are spending, and people also need to realize that. They look past it. The SEIU is paying those political contributions with your tax dollars.
Yes, yes.
They're using them against us.
Yeah.
And you want to talk about campaign reform and illegal, you know, because all they want to talk about is Citizens United, right? And the impact that's had on corporate campaign, you know, funding and all that kind of stuff, which I've sat there and gone, you know, I've been convinced over time that I think we definitely need to look at Citizens United and there's a potential problem there. But when you're looking at me and telling me you think Citizens United's a problem and you don't think the SEIU is?
Yeah.
Like the SEIU isn't a corporation. Oh, great. Oh, so a corporation, okay. Right, takes some of the profit their employees make and they use them in political contributions. SEIU takes dues. What's the difference?
There is no difference. One is socially acceptable in the media. Like the unions can throw, the teachers' unions are spending six figures of, money that's just kickbacks from the government, from the Democrats, to keep boys and girls sports. Six figures. Right. And it's just outrageous. And I get so mad these days when there are still teachers who are a member of the union who are saying, the union, you know, 50% of public school teachers in Washington should refuse to pay dues to the union. Given that's what their money is used for. It's just outrageous.
Well, the ones that I still get cracked, and it just amazes me, you see these tropes just continued and people keep repeating them. oh, they want every single kid to have to take a physical. And you go, tell me you've never played high school sports without telling me never. I had to take a physical every year to qualify for high school sports. Like the lies surrounding all of this stuff are just incredible. And then watching news outlets like Como, like re-air it over and over. Oh, if we don't do this, all these kids are going to have to take physicals. And you go, they already do.
Yeah.
What are we talking about?
Yeah.
It's just the dishonesty in the whole thing. You know, that's just what, like, that's what drives me nuts.
Dishonesty and stupidity. You have to hear this. I've been waiting to play this for you. And I wanted to send it to you a week ago, but I'm like, no, I'll see him. So remember the one millionaire they found who's like, they're trotting out as they're like, oh, I'm such a good guy. I want to pay more taxes. I just, the government has to make me first, you know?
Yeah.
So he was out at the kickoff to oppose the initiative campaign. And I was sitting there, I mean, listen to this. So people were asking, you know, the media was there asking, like, you know, what if a lot of tech people leave and all this stuff? Rich people are moving. There's a bunch of listings on the market. Honest to God, this is what this dude said.
I think it's important to remember that even for us tech workers, making $1 million in regular income in a single year is often a pretty rarefied event, right? But lots of us tech workers want to buy houses much earlier in our career than we ever make that much money. And today in Seattle, your housing dollar goes literally twice as far as it goes in San Francisco. So if you want to think about this talking point about $3 million houses are selling because rich people are leaving. Now, if somebody buys them, that means another rich person's moving in. But let's go with the nightmare scenario. Like the price drops. So now in Seattle, you can get what would cost you $6 million in San Francisco for $2 million. You want to talk about tech recruiting? Buckle up.
Zach. He is celebrating the possibility that home prices could be cut in half, that home values could be cut in half, like a Detroit-esque housing market crash. This guy's like, wouldn't that be great? We can all buy mansions for pennies on the dollar.
Well, yeah. And
that's their right mind.
Yeah, and Seattle's no different than San Francisco. The other thing I'd like to tell him is, hey, bud, San Francisco's getting an exodus of people too.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
Like, and this is across the political divide. Whether we're talking about the guys from Zillow, whether you're talking about Howard Schultz, whether you're talking, go on down the list, right? What are they going to tell you? They're not making it up. It's devastating. And you don't have California's coastline. You don't have 280, 300 days of summer. What they want you to believe is that the rules of economics don't apply and that they're not, it's asinine, right?
Yeah.
It always has been. California has always been able to do stupid, corrupt things because it's the most spectacular piece of real estate on the face of the earth. Now, given my choice, would I rather live in Washington? Yeah, because I'm born and raised here and I'm biased and I love it and it's beautiful and I like the colder winters and, you know, all that kind of stuff. But on balance, are most people, do most kids dream about moving out of Topeka to post up in Tacoma? No. Right? San Diego, LA.
It only goes so far. I ran into a guy in Leavenworth who I was walking on a beautiful trail in Leavenworth and he stopped me and he's like, oh, you know, I really appreciate what you do. I'm leaving though. I'm going to Utah. And he's like, you know, and you know, Utah's pretty too, but it's hard. You're in this beautiful place and people are talking about leaving. It takes a lot to get someone to leave somewhere as gorgeous as California, somewhere as gorgeous as Washington State and places like that. It's outrageous. All right, let's do a little money moves. Iraq. Oh, my goodness. U.S. oil firms signed deals with Iraq to develop alternative shipping routes to bypass the Strait of Hormuz. First of all, what do you make of Iraq spending $60 billion, signing $60 billion in agreements with U.S. companies? I saw people posting pictures of President Bush saying, mission finally accomplished. Like, maybe this is what it was all for. Yeah.
So, look, I think that that's a complex conversation. But I think generally speaking, any diversification of the flow of oil out of a concentrated place like the Middle East is a good idea. Hmm. It is not going to be the panacea that everybody thinks it can be. And why? It's called ballistic missiles, meaning there are not targets inside of Iraq that Iran can't hit. So if the point is to stop the slow of the flow of oil, we were just having a conversation about it today because people go, oh, alternate routes. You guys, they just hit stuff in Jordan.
Yeah.
Go pull open a map. Okay. See where Jordan is. You can't pick up an oil well and move it. Right. So now generally, do I think that, yeah, I think the less concentration you've got of oil going through one place is a wonderful thing. Is it going to help in this current situation? No, because it's not going to come online anywhere near quick enough.
Yeah.
And it's all about the origin points of where the oil is coming. And, you know, I will say that when we were handicapping this whole issue from the start, we have not been correct as of yet about where the price of oil was going. If you would have told me that we were here, you know, if we went back 4 months ago and you told me we were still here now, I would think that the price of oil was well over $120 a barrel.
Yeah.
That being said, I still think it can absolutely get there. Mm-hmm. And I think that, you're about ready to see next year, our SPR reserves drop under 300 million barrels for the first time in history, which kind of puts us in a theoretical range. Cause we don't really know how much more we can extract as the level in the SPR goes down. You've got less pressure, less flow. Yep. We've already seen a reduction in flow.
Strategic petroleum reserves. I just want.
Yep. And so, the situation in the Middle East, contrary to the way the media seems to be handling it, it's getting stickier by the day. Cause now you've got the Houthis threatening, well, Iran via the Houthis threatening to shut down the Red Sea. If you shut down the Red Sea, you're taking somewhere from another 4 to 8 million barrels offline. And like I said, SPR reserves, you can't just keep pulling them forever and ever. So, I think generally speaking, like I said, the more diversification and the more pipelines and you know, it's probably never a good idea to have 20 to 22% of global oil flow going through one street,
yeah.
Right? So the more you diversify that, that's better. Is it going to help us in this current situation? No. It's a puzzler for me because, you just don't see a lot of good options.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like it's one of those tough scenarios. And this was kind of the same place that we were afraid we'd end up in when this started. And, like I said, it hasn't gone horribly. We're not $150, you know, but the threat is not over here by any stretch of the imagination. And, more importantly, it's hard to understand where you go from here. Cause I don't really see either side being greatly incentivized to end this anytime soon. I don't really see it.
Yeah. I tend to agree with you more and more as the days go by is just President Trump, underestimated what this would take. Because I mean, they never should have given their estimate. So this will be done in 4 days or 4 weeks or whatever it is. I can't even remember what the first estimate was. Was it 4 days?
No, and remember, one of the tough parts about it anytime, and military history is so replete with these things,
yeah.
Right? You really have to delineate when we're talking about military action. Do you have a specific goal you want that military to attack, or do you want the military to do that in hopes that it engenders the goal you want? Meaning those are two different things.
Mm-hmm.
And generally speaking, anytime your theory is, okay, we're going to take these military actions, hoping that it precipitates this outcome, as opposed to, you know, the military is a blunt object, right? So when you're sending them on a mission to destroy this, destroy that, they're usually pretty good at that. But when your goal is a secondary goal, right, where you're saying, we believe that by destroying those things, it's going to engender this outcome. It's going to change their mind. That's what Vietnam was all about.
Yeah.
And you go back to these long drawn out military, you know, issues. And if you don't have specific military objectives in mind, now the administration keeps saying that they do, but I don't see the evidence of that.
Yeah. I do, right? Think Americans need a little more info at this point, a little more of a plan, and less
a roadmap.
Yeah.
Like what are we trying to do?
Yeah.
Right. Like I'm not even sure what that is. You just keep telling me that you want the Strait open. You don't want Iran to have nuclear weapons. Well, you know, that's like me telling my kids, I want them to be well-behaved and get good grades. Okay. Well, of course I do. But what does that mean? Right. Like, I don't know. So
yeah,
I fingers crossed. I hope it ends well. I'm just really hoping we don't get a big spike in oil and inflation, which I think we will, but I'm hoping I'm wrong.
Not good ahead of the midterms. Zach, thank you so much.
Thank you so much, baby.